Chapter 1. The cry of a seagull, or what was actually a yellow pterosaur-looking creature overhead, caught my attention, and I stopped my work with the mainsail for a second so I could watch it circle around in the breezy updraft against the clear sky. The day was glorious, but it was deceiving. If one were to widen their scope a bit, they would see how a barrier of storm clouds and ominous lightning had wrapped itself completely around this patch of calm. As much as I tried to pretend otherwise, I knew I was just looking up at the eye of the endless storm the Soaring Light and her remaining crew had been trapped inside of going on 5 days now. After being steered into the eye of the never-ending hurricane by Captain Nemus's band of mutinous and brainwashed crew, we'd found ourselves out of danger but stranded. And the reality at present was we were almost out of food and water. And there were those of us on board who weren't doing the best with all this extended time out at sea. Zoe, for instance, had never fully found her sea legs. Shay's appetite was off, and Rylan couldn't sleep because Mr. Jenner snored. It was enough to make me never want to take the fam on a cruise ever again. Then, of course, there was the matter of the Terran Regent Lord who, after his break from sanity, had refused to eat, sleep, or talk. So that's been fun.
Master Alex!
A zany half-raccoon, half-man appeared in front of me from the ship's rigging in a jangle of potentially pirated jewelry.
Gah!
I startled, and the rope in my hands almost slipped. What can I do for you, Captain Nemus?
Alex, my friend,
Nemus said, and twisted himself the right way round.
What be the correct response if I yell, Windwards ho, ye scatty scoundrels!
I raised an eyebrow but grinned at his antics, and then I tied off the rope so it wouldn't unravel from the pulley. It means all hands adjust the sails into the wind, I responded diligently.
Aye!
The pirate man scrutinized me through his dark-ringed eyes, as if he was put out about my correct answer.
And the reverse of windwards?
Leewards, I answered. Is everyone getting this pop quiz, or am I special?
Pop quiz,
the eccentric raccoon man said, with an emphasis on the buzzing end sound.
I like that. And yes, the others have been victims to my dastardly sailing questions.
Dastardly? I snorted and leaned against some crates.
I'm not being too pushy-shovey, am I? You'd tell me, right?
Nemus clutched the various skull-beaded necklaces like a maiden clutching her pearls.
My cousin, Mercedes guide him, always told me I have the propensity to be a little bit like fizzy wine. A little goes a great many lengths.
You're good, Nemus, I chuckled, and patted the captain on the shoulder.
And you are honest, Brightwood.
Nemus grinned as he clasped my wrist.
I'm glad to have a brave man such as you to weather the pending trial.
You still want to try and sail out of the storm today? I asked, when his expression sobered.
Aye, we have no choice, I fear, he said,
and hopped up onto a barrel so he could squint out at the horizon.
At least if we greet death on this day, it'll spare us a slow and painful wasting due to thirst.
At least there's that, I repeated grimly. Are you worried?
My beauteous ship is more than up for the task. But the ocean can be a temperamental mistress, and this storm hungers,
Nemus said, and his odd inflection was as changeable as he was and made him sound like an old Irish sailor.
However, your son did a mighty fine job patching up our storm sail. Once you finish reefing the other sails, please meet me in my quarters with Ambassador Siskern.
Will do, Captain, I said, and reached for the rope I was working with before.
You with the hair!
Nemus suddenly barked and pointed a finger at Horus, who froze in the middle of folding some extra canvas.
Which one of these lines is for the topsail?
This one,
the Falcon Man and my best friend said as he fumbled with the rigging around him.
You're correct,
Nemus said with a little pout, as if he was really looking forward to calling someone out.
Carry on, midshipman.
And then the strange little man scurried back up the rigging like a spider monkey, ostensibly to question Amaya about lifelines up in the crow's nest.
I thought I was a lot to get used to,
Horace chuckled and came over to stand next to me. You're like a tranquilized Arvid compared to him, I agreed, and clapped him on the shoulder. I think the captain is nervous about sailing through the storm.
Oh, I miss the big guy, Horace said, as he stretched his arms across his body. Makes me realize the captain also lost all his crew except for an odd handful.
Poor guy, I murmured, as I tracked my gaze around the soaring light. It seemed Shay was teaching Zoe and Anwar how to darn socks, while Jenner made a list of people awaiting their patched items. Rylan was just above them in the rigging with a look of concentration on his face as he helped another deckhand furl the mainsail. Counting Siskern and Siskorn below deck, it seemed as if my company nearly outnumbered the Raccoon Man's original crew, and because I knew from experience how meaningful a found family was, I figured it had to hurt to see the ship so empty. I just hope the captain's head was in the game when we decided to get this show on the road.
Hey, H, I queried. What's on your mind, Chief? He asked back.
Think Nemus is up for getting us through the endless storm? I turned to him so I could watch his expression.
Did my sister ever tell you how she hired the captain?
Horace gathered up the canvas and started tucking it into one of the stowage cupboards under the quarterdeck. No, but if I had to guess, Nemus was something of a stray she brought home. I chuckled as I observed my beautiful phoenix wife adjust Anwar's grip on the needle with expert patience. Am I right?
Like with most things with my sister, Shay's capacity for empathy for old creatures outweighs her common sense sometimes.
Horace snorted and shut the cupboard with his heel as he turned back to face me.
Nemus was a miserable drunk who'd recently washed up on Nata's shores after a bad shipwreck. But Shay saw through all that even when he was ostracized from his own Lenian people for losing the Crown Prince in the wreck. She just needed a way to convince Bala to hire him. And because she's clever, she manipulated that scat bastard Wren into entering a gamble that required a swift vessel that could sail through Jagged Reef in the north. The rest is history. But to answer your previous question, if anyone is crazy enough to survive the bloody endless storm, it would be Nemus.
Oh? I arched an eyebrow when I sensed there was more. What was the wager Shay conned Bala into?
The wager?
He drew out the suspense in typical Ham Horace fashion, and I simply waited for the showboat to finish his tall tale.
It was that no one could navigate through the sharp cliffs and the rough waves in under one quarter's length. And then, when the madcap showed up drunk on the appointed day, he opened his mouth and declared he could do it blindfolded, double or nothing. No way, I laughed, even though that fit perfectly with the little I knew of the eccentric captain.
Bala made a lot of gold that day,
Horace said as he smiled fondly at his sister.
I have never questioned Shaylee's judgment of character ever since.
Noted, I said. And then I spied Siskern ascending from below deck and toward the quarterdeck where the captain's quarters were located.
Come with me, H. The captain wants to go over stuff.
The Falcon Man nodded, and we both made our way to the small chamber below the quarterdeck where Mr. Hervin was manning the wheel. Inside was a modest room similar to the crew quarters with a desk covered in maps and charts. These charts showed the archipelago Avantol, and my gaze was immediately drawn to it. Jenner had maps and stuff in his study, but they were mostly of Nata Isle. Seeing the cluster of shapes floating in the artist's depiction of the ocean Mercedes was intriguing. I picked out the rugby ball-shaped island I was so familiar with seeing above the koala man's desk. But I was especially curious about the claw-shaped island to the southeast of Nata labeled with our destination.
Alex and friend!
Nemus gushed as he looked over up from where he and Siskern were examining a rendered image of the hurricane we were trapped in.
Hello, Brightwood,
Siskern said with a smile. Ambassador, I greeted and extended my hand so we could clasp forearms. How's your brother?
He still refuses food and drink, and he only utters half-formed words and sentences in his sleep,
the lizard man said as neutrally as he could. But I could see the lines of worry that made his jaw and shoulders tense.
But he rests now. Thank you for inquiring. And we are almost on my home ground, so it is you who will have to get used to the title of ambassador, my friend.
Oh, right, I said, and cleared my throat in order to change the subject. So, I have a question. Why are there only 7 islands on this map? Doesn't Avantol have 8?
Good question. Very astute of you,
Nemus said, and grinned a patchy grin.
The eighth isle of La moves, you see, and one can never pin her down when one wants. Not even the law folk, like our dear Midgeon, not anymore.
As if on cue, a deep clap of thunder could be heard from the internal storm.
More about that later, hey, Neem? Horace suggested, and nudged the raccoon man out of one of the strange and sudden fugue states he was frequently prone to time and again.
Ahem.
The captain blinked his coal-rimmed eyes and plucked his tri-cornered hat from where it was hanging on a wall peg.
Mr. Siskern and I were just hypothesizing about how to exit the beast that is the storm, and he was just about to explain to me the ancient Terran ritual called the Gauntlet.
Then by all means, please continue, I said to the lizard man.
It is an Upper Terran coming-of-age ceremony to take a frigate from the days of old and sail into the eye of the storm and then back out again,
Siskern explained.
There is a place between the whirling arms of the storm that is just wide enough where the waves and the winds aren't as powerful. We call it the Gauntlet.
Apt, Horace commented.
But I was also just about to tell the captain that although I am of the upper echelon, the practice of this ceremony is symbolic and performed as a parade through the capital city,
the lizard man continued.
Because of the high mortality rate not only for the sons, but also the fathers who were expected to teach them by example, and because of the antiquated quality of the frigates, the ceremony evolved.
You mean your people became fat and lazy?
Nemus said pointedly. And he finally shoved the hat on his head so he could aim his double-barreled glare along the hat's center point.
I object to that wholeheartedly!
Siskern suddenly snapped, as the accusation hit the chord the raccoon man probably intended.
Don't lie!
Nemus barked, and an edge of something dark and dangerous flashed across his face.
I've run across several that your ilk has banished. They all say the same things about you uppish folk. Entitled fat cowards, the lot of you. You may have lowish blood, but you are uppish bred.
Watch your tongue!
The lizard man hissed, and his tail lashed out in agitation and thunked against the legs of the desk.
My father's second mother may have been of lower descent, but do not mistake my visage for being anything less than lethal.
A loud ripping could be heard, and suddenly Siskern's boots busted open to reveal a set of formidable claws similar to a raptor. With a growl, his transformation completed itself as his teeth grew a little longer, and dual ridges of neon green extended up like the sails of a schooner on either side of his skull.
Whoa,
Horace said, as Siskern continued to growl and raise himself to balance on the balls of his feet like a proper velociraptor.
Ha! I got you to posture, natty nat!
The captain twiddled his nose in a teasing manner. Siskern blinked before he threw back his rigid head and laughed long and loud.
Well played.
What exactly just happened? I asked with a cautiously confused smile.
You really have kept the company of my Terran kin, if you know about the fool's posture.
Siskern chuckled and clapped the raccoon man on the back hard enough his hat popped off.
To be honest, I was purely concerned for the sanctity of your balance.
Nemus kicked his hat up and caught it in one practiced motion.
I've had many a Terran midshipman who have tried to hide their primal features, and their clumsiness is often more of a liability.
And the fool's posture? Horace asked.
It is a game between uppish schoolboys,
Siskern explained, and he rolled his head around on his neck, as if he finally got permission to stop holding in his stomach or something.
The goal is to anger the other into a primal display, typically in public.
Like pantsing someone. At the blank looks I received, I then took it upon myself to elaborate. Pulling down someone's pants in public, because it's funny.
Exactly, Siskern said. It is frowned upon to show strong emotions in upper. Although you could have just told me it was preferable to take off my boots.
Yeah, but this was way more fun,
the captain said, and he gleefully rubbed his hands together as he faced the hurricane map again.
Now, show me where on here that beauty of a gauntlet is.
It is here, but there is another reason no one undertakes this feat anymore.
Siskern sighed.
There was a time when it was possible to calculate the timing down to the mite. But the poor souls who managed to straggle their way back reported the unpredictable patterns that made sailing virtually impossible.
Do you know virtually impossible was almost my name?
Nemus cackled and started to pull the hurricane map down from the wall.
About how many seasons would you say this map is out of date?
Close to 80, why?
Siskern asked.
I need to ask our resident augur woman to commune with Soaring in order to make my calculations,
the captain said, as he rolled up the weathered parchment.
Be ready to man your positions on my order. Will your people be waiting for us on the other side?
Our delayed return no doubt has alerted my uncle something has gone terribly wrong,
the raptor man said.
He will have guards posted on the eastern fortress, as well as the western harbor. If we make it through, he cannot miss us.
Good to hear, good fella.
Nemus then whirled out of the cramped quarters, like the dervish he was.
Alas, I must prepare my brother,
Siskern said, and smoothed his hands over his head so his ridges would retract.
I must remove his shoes, apparently, and then get him above deck, where he may be secured with one of the harnesses I fortified just this day.
Good for you, my man, I said, and Horace and I followed him out of the captain's quarters and into the crisp air. Then I squinted up at the mainmast to see if I could get a glimpse of the Oryx woman and the captain.
What's the situation, husband?
Zoe asked, as she sidled up next to me, and even though we'd spent days at sea, her fresh clover scent could still be smelled under the unwashed briny scents that clung to all of us. Nemus is asking Amaya to help with calculations, but essentially this is it, I said, and then made my eye contact with the others as they started to gather around Horace and me. This is the day we're getting out of this place. By the time the captain gave the signal and manned the wheel, all of us were in our places with our safety harnesses secured to the iron loops bolted to the deck. All of us had some slack so we could brace on either side of the ship if the keel was too sharp either way. And each harness was also long enough for each of the 10 people manning the ropes to reach the ones they were in charge of. Even though we'd been stranded at sea, our noble captain had not kept us idle. The first 2 days were spent rigorously learning the ropes on the 3-masted ship. And then, the next 2 were spent practicing different runs as Nemus steered us near the inner edge of the violent vortex so we could practice manning the vessel as a single unit. Me being the farm boy I was in the past, sailing was a completely foreign trade to me. But as the days went by under the zany man's instruction, I figured that was probably for the best. Some of the commands the captain would holler out were definitely nothing like what I'd even remotely heard or read about. So in the end, I was a blank slate. This thankfully kept the confusion at bay, and I found myself taking to sailing pretty well. But now was the true test.
Hold the lines until we catch the sprint,
Nemus ordered from the helm, as he aimed us into the rain and mist, and I turned toward the stern to get a last glimpse of the calm waters of the eye.
Dad,
Rylan murmured from next to me as the sky darkened and fat drops of water began to pelt us. Yes, I asked, and reached over to make sure his lifeline was properly tied.
Thanks for being my dad, just in case, you know, we get killed,
he said with a sunny smile despite the dire circumstances. And even though impending doom was most likely incredibly fucking nigh, I couldn't help the wild grin from tugging up the corners of my mouth.
We won't. Just listen to the captain and don't second-guess yourself, I shouted over the wind and ruffled his sopping wet hair. And don't forget to have fun!
Alex, my darling!
Shay called out from her position closest to the bow with her braided scarlet hair whipping around.
I love you, you crazy man!
I love you too,
I yelled, and then I reached out my hand for Zoe, who was to my right like she always was, my rock. And as the wind picked up, and her ebony locks lashed around just as furious as the impending storm, I looked deeply into her indigo eyes. "Ready?" I mouthed.
"Always,"
she said back. And then she captured my lips in a deep kiss as the waves began to swell.
"This is it!"
Nemus cried out over the screech of the tempest.
"Steady on! Keep that mane in tight! Master Rylan, hold the storm sail always windwards! All hands quick and ready!"
"Aye, Captain!"
we shouted as one. From that point on, it was a constant barrage of commands I found myself obeying on autopilot as we all danced to the rhythm of the hurricane.
"Mr. Alex, adjust the arm! Everyone, pull right against the keel!"
the raccoon man roared as he swung the ship around to try and keep us in the flattest parts of the rolling waves.
"The timing, Captain!"
Siskern bellowed as he braced against the starboard side of the ship with the rest of us. He flung a finger upwards, and I could see how the black clouds overhead were picking up speed.
"He's right!"
Amaya shouted over the wailing gale.
"Soaring has slowed with the wind. We must turn her and pick up speed, or else..."
A violent howl exploded through the air, and as if a fucking hurricane wasn't enough to contend with, the sky was now a dark maroon with the onslaught of the angry red sun.
"Alex, this sky!"
Zoe cried out.
"Captain!"
I called, as the wave started to heave higher and higher. The raccoon man's mouth hung open, and his hat was torn away by the furious winds. However, another eerie howl thundered louder than the clashing wind, and he snapped out of it.
"Mr. Alex and Mr. Horace!"
Nemus began turning the wheel at a rapid clip.
"When I tell you to, start hoisting the mainsail! We'll catch our sprint on the wind's backside!"
"Aye, Captain!"
Horace and I both shouted back, even though we exchanged worried glances.
"Didn't he always tell us we should never hoist this one during the storm?"
Horace asked as we both untied and gripped the rope. But before I could answer, the crazy raccoon pirate cackled to the red sky.
"Ha ha ha! The dark may not take me yet!"
Nemus screamed.
"Now, lads! Hand over hand, razor high!"
Horace and I poured every ounce of strength into hauling the mainsail up as the soaring light turned almost a full 180 degrees. The wind battered the side of the ship as we cut across the no-sail zone, but when the captain aimed the bow just right of where the wind was pushing us back, the mainsail caught the wind enough that we were able to put on a boost of speed before the whole mast was torn off in the wind. Zoe screamed as a wave surged up the side of the ship before the Catwoman had a chance to brace herself, and she was launched sky high.
"Zoe!"
I yelled as I saw her lifeline snap, and time slowed down as I followed the trajectory of her body. It was clear she was about to be pitched clean over the side into the raging waters, and just as the icy fear crawled up my spine, I flung my hand out without thinking.
"No!"
A silent sonic boom seemed to impact the air around me as all of my conviction was instantaneously channeled into the strongest time stop I'd done yet. Everything, even the churning sea, froze, and I gasped for breath that I felt was snatched from me with the shock of energy. I almost blacked out for a second, but my knees hitting the deck was the sharp jolt I needed to stay conscious, and I groaned as my fingers clawed at the mainmast. I looked up at my catwife frozen in midair and then gaped at the towering Everest of water at least three times bigger than the rogue wave in the Poseidon adventure. For a moment, the futility of even saving Zoe when we were all about to be pummeled by this wall of ocean was almost laughable. But then I shook my doubt off like thawing snowmelt and willed my leaden fingers to undo my harness. Then, with limbs that felt like they were filled with sand, I started to climb up the 5 feet or so to where Zoe was suspended. Tick. The cord of invisible tension that held time at bay started to stretch.
"Come on,"
I panted as I reached out my hand for Zoe's wrist. Tick. I gasped as the feeling of fishhooks yanked me behind the sternum, like something wanted to rip my ribcage open, and I had to grip onto the ropes with both hands when my vision doubled. Tick. My hold on the time stop was slipping, and I was fairly sure it wouldn't be by choice considering how my vision kept swimming in and out. That was why I wrote off the first flash I saw as being just the shiny cobwebs I was used to seeing in my strained vision. But when I saw the second flash, I knew it was something else. Through the wall of water, staring back at me, was the familiar sight of two large chrome-colored eyes, and they were blinking at me curiously, as if wanting to see what I would do. I reached out for Zoe again, but the pulling in my chest made me clutch at the mast again when the pain threatened to make me fall. My foot slipped, and I glanced down at the frozen tableau of all the people I cared about, fighting their hardest even when things looked like they were at their most hopeless. And I glared back at the Leviathan still peering at me through the frozen wave.
"Help me!"
I pleaded to those large, blinking eyes.
"Save them!"
Tick. Snap. I heard myself scream when the time stop began to retract like a rapidly shrinking balloon, and I knew time would resume its normal stride any second.
"No!"
I yelled, as Zoe's body started to slowly resume its trajectory, and her wrist drifted farther away from my grasp.
"Avantol!"
And, just when my grip slipped off the mast, and I plunged to the deck below, the black and green Leviathan from my dreams crashed through the wave and swallowed the entire ship in its dark black maw.